Welcome to the Dietitians Unplugged podcast with Erin Flores and Glennis Oyston. Join us as we explore the idea of health and wellness from a new perspective. Each episode will explore topics that will help you improve your health, body image, and fitness without obsessing over the scale or counting calories. We believe in health at every size, intuitive eating, and body positivity, and each new episode will help you build the confidence to ditch the scale and embrace your health without shaming your body.
Welcome back for another edition of Dietitians Unplugged. You might notice a little bit of a difference. We got some new equipment, so hopefully we sound a little bit better in your ear holes.
We've got some awesome stuff now.
Right.
It's so like a real studio.
We're moving up in the world.
Yeah.
So it's the new year. It's January. We're here recording our first episode for 2016. We sort of wanted to touch briefly on a topic you probably just listened to about Oprah Winfrey and Weight Watchers. Now that we've seen some of the ads come out and we've seen some of the publicity for it, we just sort of wanted to briefly revisit the topic and share our thoughts on how we see it's going.
Yeah. Oprah update 2016.
Right. Exactly. So I think the biggest thing that sticks out for me, Glennis, is the fact that the ads are almost worse than I thought on some level, like the level of almost hypocrisy that I feel is more than I thought it could be.
They're pretty bad. They're very presumptuous. And Oprah says something like, inside every overweight woman is a woman she knows she can be. And that just hit me really hard because I think, Oprah, what do you know about me and the woman who's inside me?
And it hit me hard, and I'm not even a woman.
Right, I mean, exactly. Never mind that she's just completely excluding men. It's obvious that Weight Watchers decide they're going to still continue to target women. So, and Oprah, you know, Oprah has such a strong connection with women. So, and then the other ad where she talks about, it's not about fitting into jeans. Let's just have the best body that we can for 2016. But I don't know what she means by that other than let's lose weight. And then, of course, in the small print or the not so small print, Weight Watchers says, lose the first 10 pounds on us for free. And so obviously they're still talking about weight.
Right. It's so contradictory because, they're saying it's not about weight loss, but let's have the best body we can in 2016 where, you know, it is about losing weight to have your best body.
And there's the assumption that you already don't have your best body.
Exactly.
Somehow your body is already flawed and broken.
And I think that is the biggest shameful thing about it, is that right. There's this notion that your body is broken and that unless you lose weight, it will remain broken.
Right. I did a little bit of research last week on all the different diets and weight loss that Oprah has sort of gone through. And it started out with the liquid protein shake diet, and that's when she got into the Calvin Klein jeans. And then within 2 years, she had gained all the weight back, and then she had quotes, and it said, I was starving myself, and I'm never going to diet again. That was ridiculous. And then the next thing you know, she had Rosie the chef and Bob somebody the trainer, and she lost weight again with that. She kept that off for a few years, but a few years later, she gained all that back, and she says things like, I'm really mad at myself for this. And I look at my weight and I think, how did I get here? And it's just upsetting to me that it's never clicked for her that maybe she's not a thin person. But here she is again doing, Weight Watchers, this is the thing that's going to fix me. So, and maybe she's doing a lot of saying a lot of things about, it's not about your weight, because maybe she knows there's a good chance she could lose weight and also gain it all back.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it all sort of continues to develop. But I think it was important for us to sort of just briefly talk about it and
right.
share our thoughts on how this sort of campaign is unfolding before our very eyes, and sort of the displeasure that we both have for how this is being handled.
Right. What I was pleased about, though, is that there were a lot of voices in the body positive world sort of crying out and saying, Oprah, you don't speak for me. And
yeah.
Still continue to be very disappointed. So I think that maybe it'll be interesting to see how successful the campaign is, because I'm not sure people are going to buy it.
Well, we'll see. We'll check Oprah's financial statement at the end of the year and see how well she did. But it actually sort of leads us into our topic for today, because we wanted to talk a little bit about intuitive eating and, you know, why it's so hard to give up that sort of weight part of it. Why to give up, you know, that the notion that will I ever lose weight on intuitive eating? So it sort of fits in exactly to what we were just talking about of giving up. You know, how do we finally give up that notion that I need to change the number on the scale?
Right. And I think there's a big misconception that intuitive eating is another diet to help you lose weight. And the researchers aren't helping, because there was a study that came out a few months ago that said that compared intuitive eating with calorie restriction to see how much weight people would lose. And they said, well, intuitive eating wasn't as good as calorie restriction for losing weight. But the problem is, and everybody just went crazy about this in the intuitive eating world, they said that's not what intuitive eating is for. It's not meant for weight loss. And in fact, one of the main tenets of intuitive eating is to reject a weight loss mentality. And I feel that you really can't get into intuitive eating until you sort of decided that you're going to at least try to do that.
Yeah. And again, I think it's important to restate that when we talk about intuitive eating, we're talking about some validated material, some validated studies based on the work of Elise Resch and Evelyn Tribbley, both dietitians in the Southern California area, written in their book, now in their third edition. We're talking about, not to sound arrogant, but the real deal of intuitive eating, right? It's not some offshoot or something like that. This is validated data that's looking at the benefits of changing your relationship with food. And the core to that, like you said, is giving up that diet mentality,
mm-hmm.
putting weight really on the back burner and really getting to why our relationships with our food and our body are so disjointed.
One of the terms that Ellen Satter uses is becoming a competent eater. And she used that in referring to children, but I think that it is really valid for adults who have been dieting for so long and has sort of lost touch with everything that tells them how to eat. So one of the things I love intuitive eating, but what I try to tell people is eventually it's just eating. It's just eating the way you would eat if you weren't all messed up by diets.
It's interesting because when I talk to people about intuitive eating, whether they're a client who's coming into my office or a friend or a family member or even just another healthcare provider, that weight component is the area that gets stuck on the most. And I see it a lot in clients who continue to sort of ask, when am I going to lose weight? How will this help me lose weight? I've seen it a lot on Facebook posts, you know, on the intuitive eating support groups about, you know, when will this help me lose weight? I'm worried about gaining weight. I'm worried about it. Will I ever lose weight? And I think it's a really important thing to address, because it sort of can stymie the progression of intuitive eating. It can really sort of withhold some of those things.
Yeah, I agree. And I see where it's sort of coming from, because there are people who will begin to eat intuitively that have been overeating for a long time. And some people, once they start listening to those internal cues, they will lose some weight. That's not at all what the research is about. That's never been sort of validated with research, that intuitive eating is for weight loss. So it's really anecdotal that people are saying, hey, I started eating intuitively and I lost weight. So I think other people are hearing that and thinking, well, if they did that, then if I just start doing that, I will also lose weight. But it really just depends on where you are in your weight journey. If you've been a longtime suppressor, a weight suppressor, you are probably not going to lose more weight. You are maybe even going to gain some weight, like I did when I started to eat intuitively. Or maybe your weight will just stay the same, but it's not a guarantee. And I think that's people are hearing that and saying, well, if that person lost weight, maybe I'll lose weight. And it's unfortunate. It's just too bad that people do talk about, oh, I started eating intuitively and I lost weight, instead of saying, I started eating intuitively and I had this great relationship with food and I stopped thinking about it all the time and it wasn't a big problem for me. It really is that people do get back to the weight a lot of times. But that is, I think, a big blockade.
You're right. And I think it starts this with that focus on weight and that struggle to give it up is part of what leads to that diet mentality, you know, and that I need to change this size that I am, and I'll do anything to do it. And, you know, it's interesting. It's one of those things that is probably, you know, especially like when I'm working with people trying to become more intuitive in their eating, we're changing the way you think about something. You know, I thought about my weight and eating, you know, for maybe 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And now you're asking me to change it. And it doesn't happen on a dime. It doesn't happen just as soon as you know, maybe like you read the first part of the book and you're like, oh, this makes total sense. I can see how this would happen. It doesn't happen overnight.
Not at all. I think the work of becoming an intuitive eater, you are going to learn those, to listen to those internal signals of hunger and fullness. But there's also the other prong where you have to do all this work to deprogram yourself, basically, and to decide maybe the way I've been thinking about this is wrong, in that weight loss has never worked for me. Dieting has never worked for me. And that is, like you said, it could take years. I mean, it could be weeks, it could be months, it could be years. And I know for myself that logically I could say, okay, none of that worked to make me happy. The dieting was a very sort of horrible existence in a way. But, you know, then as my weight started to gain weight, I kind of panicked a little bit. And I would kind of ask, like, oh, maybe I should eat less of that. Maybe I should restrict a little bit. But I would just say to myself, okay, no, you've got to commit. If this is going to work, you have to commit.
Yeah. So. And remind us again, because were you a dietitian already when you were working on this, or were you not yet a dietitian?
No, I was in school. So I was in school to become a dietitian. So I was all ready to kind of go into this dietitian world, being somebody who helped people lose weight.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the biggest. And then I heard about Health at Every Size first and kind of decided to stop dieting, but had no idea what I was doing. And then I found intuitive eating a year later. And that's when it started. I realized, okay, this is what I really have to do.
Yeah.
There is a process here, and it does take time. And I'd say, you know, I've come so far. You know?
Right.
Yeah. But it took years.
And that part, right, that it took years, I think that's what gets people so hung up. Because, you mean I'm going to have to work on this for a long time? Like, I'm going to actually have to put some really strong effort into it. And on some level, yes. You know, it's yes, you're going to have to, like you said, commit to this. And what's interesting is that notion that, yes, I'm going to have to work on this pretty hard, and I'm going to have to, you know, devote some time to this. But it's the level of, I think it's different work, right? I mean, when we talk about being on a diet, you know, and like committing to the work of intuitive eating, I think it's so different. And I think with intuitive eating, it's like you said, it's almost like realizing that food and your body is not one compartment of your life. It's a part of everything. It touches all these different parts of your life. And when you really look at intuitive eating, it's really, I mean, yeah, you're healing your relationship with food in your body, but it goes on to actually help so many other parts of your life, and it ripples into all these other parts. It's interesting because the clients that I see, or the people that I talk to that seem to have the most quote unquote success with intuitive eating, where they really embrace and it really does change their relationship with food, at some point they develop that understanding that it's going to touch all these really important parts of their lives, and that it's not just oh, I'm going to eat more vegetables and I'm going to have ice cream whenever I want and I won't have the whole carton, I'll just have a scoop. It's so much bigger than that.
I agree. And the amount of time it frees up for you as well, you know, gives you so much time to live, to do all the things that you want to do in your life that aren't food related, because not all of us are going to become dietitians, and not all of us want to become dietitians. And yet people are spending as much time thinking about food when they're on diets as a dietitian would. And going back to the work that you were talking about, yeah, being on a diet is also work. And I feel there's a big difference between being on a diet feels like negative work. It feels like, don't do this. You're just spending all your time stopping yourself from doing something. And it's all about sort of thwarting your body in its natural tendency to want to gain weight or to be a certain weight. And the work around intuitive eating seems like a very positive work to me, where I never felt discouraged. It wasn't sort of like, oh gosh, I didn't eat intuitively today. I just kind of went bonkers on pizza. But there was a nice positive aspect where I could say, well, you just, tomorrow, you just do, you know, get back in touch and see how you feel. It's just a learning experience. It's an eating experience. You use that to understand how you felt about it. And it just, it's so much more positive, I think, than the negative work that you do of dieting and stopping yourself. It's kind of giving yourself the permission to go and listen to yourself. So.
Exactly. I mean, you're so right. It's that freeing notion, right? That this will translate into better parts of my life as I move forward. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But again, people are going to be stuck on that weight part. You know, it's really hard to give up. It's really hard to give up, but I think it's the key. I think it's really is sort of one really important piece that as I think about it, really helps almost predict how someone will progress through intuitive eating is how they deal with that weight piece.
Agreed. And I think then once you get past that, if you can manage to get past that, you're going to do a lot better. But I think that there's another part that kind of blocks people a little bit, which is they get hung up on the nutrition side of things. And personally, I feel that you've got to let go of good nutrition a little bit. If you're coming from a dieting mentality and a dieting way of life, you might have to give up a little bit on nutrition at first. And I know for myself, I just decided, okay, I got to not worry about this and just figure out what are the foods I like to eat. How much do I like of those foods? How full do I want to feel? What do they make me feel like? And I had to really kind of give up on worrying about, am I eating enough vegetables? Is this low fat? Is this not processed meat? That kind of thing. So I think that can be another stumbling block for people.
Totally. Especially given the amount of nutritional pressure we have these days. I'll put it up on Facebook later, but you know, I took this picture this weekend when my family and I went to Baskin Robbins for dessert, and this is the first time I've seen it. I think they just put it up, but every flavor now, at least in LA or in California, has the calories per half cup scoop.
Boo. Talk about ruining the ice cream experience.
So it was the first time I'd seen it. First time I've noticed it. I've noticed calories up on the menu board, but I've never seen it like right on the glass, right next to the flavor name. And I took the picture and I thought about it because for someone who is really thinking about becoming an intuitive eater, you're just like you said, that's such a big stumbling block, that nutritional information. Okay, now I know that there are 250 calories in my serving of mint ice cream. And now the decision is, do I really want it, knowing that information? Can I be more intuitive and say, no, it's okay to have this ice cream. It's there's no harm, no foul, you know, it's not, but it for me, it was just like, oh, maybe I shouldn't get that flavor. I should get that flavor.
I have the same experience when I go, and I really hate the nutrition information in restaurants now, because it really is sort of a block to really deciding what it is that you want to eat and how much of it. So logically, we know ice cream is not a diet food. It's high calorie. We all know that, right? We're not walking around thinking, oh, this ice cream is like the same as saltine crackers. No, we know that. But when you see the number, all of a sudden it does sort of get you. We've been so trained to look at calories and fat grams and protein and sodium, whatever else, that it really does get to you. Even if you're an intuitive eater like you or me, I still have that moment of, oh, maybe is there a better choice? And I have to really pull myself back and say, what is it that you want? Because if you walk out of here getting something you didn't want, you're going to be unhappy and you're going to eat more of something later. And I just think that the nutrition information that they've put up everywhere, it turns out it's not really helping anybody. I don't think there's any study to show that it's actually improved anybody's eating.
It'd be interesting to sort of have a public health person in here and sort of give us their feedback about especially why they feel like it's so important, because it is. It's going to be around nationwide, you know, if it's not now, it's very soon within the next, you know, year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing I noticed when I saw that information, right, is intuitive eating talks a lot about being a rebel, right? And part of me was like, oh, well, I'll be the calorie listing rebel and I'm going to look for the highest one and I'm going to order that one because screw you for putting the numbers up there,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, and telling me that this stuff is up there. I'll show you. I'll get the highest one and it won't matter anyway. But I had to dial that back because that wasn't what I wanted, right?
Right.
That's like, oh, no, that's the rebel in me wanting to push back against the rule. So it did. It really, I didn't get Minchip, by the way. but I really did. I had to listen to say, what do I really, really want? And honor that and say, you know what? I don't expect this to be a diet food, but it's okay for me to have this scoop of ice cream.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think I've put a filter on, almost like blinders now when I go into restaurants that list the calories. It's usually like more fast food type restaurants or more family friendly restaurants. But I feel like it's more and more I see it. So I sort of tried to put blinders on. I remember when I first saw it, I actually thought that was a fancy way of putting the price down. And I thought, $16.50 for what? How much? Oh, no. That's the calories. Oh,
yeah.
Come on. I don't want to know that. Because the reality is when you're an intuitive eater and you're going to eat a very high calorie food, there's a good chance you might eat less of it because it's more filling. And that has always been my experience. Yes, I might pick the thing on the menu that's 1,600 calories. Rare is the day that I can actually get through the whole thing.
Right.
You know? And the other thing that I account for is if I really eat a lot at one meal and I'm really full, I'm probably not going to eat very much at another meal later on in the day. I just know that about myself at this point.
Yeah.
So it's not sort of like, oh, I didn't. I think there's this belief that we all go around. If we don't know how many calories we're eating, we're just going to go crazy. And it's like, well, not if you're listening to your stomach.
Right.
So
that's where like these things sort of intersect is that sort of public health ideology about, oh, we need to know everything versus the intuitive side.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So Aaron, what were the personal stumbling blocks that you had when you were becoming an intuitive eater?
I mean, what's interesting is for me, again, with that weight piece, was really getting rid of my scale. I think that was probably one of the most formative things that I did and sort of saying, I'm not going to get on the scale anymore, or I'm going to try and do it less, or I'm going to do it with attunement, right? I'm really going to be conscious of how stepping on the scale affects my mood before, during, and after.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once that happened, I realized this feels really horrible getting on the scale. And it's not something I feel like is really going to help support me in this. And I'm willing to give up this part, this one action, right, to help me learn to start to feel better about myself. And I think that was the big sort of turning point. Again, it wasn't quick after that, but it took time after that. But I think that was the first thing that I realized I need to do to change how I feel about my weight and my body.
So did you start trying to eat more intuitively, but you were still weighing, or did it take, was it a few months or just a few days?
I think it was a while. Like, I think I was like playing with intuitive eating and playing with all these things, but still weighing myself and, you know, trying to. Again, that was my training, right? My training was, you know, if I do this nutritionally, what happens to me physically, right? That's what dietitians are looking at, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted the data. To me, there was a lot of comfort in having data. But it took a few months till I finally said, like, I don't think I need this data to dictate my day or how I feel about the body I have today. And that's what really sort of happened. But it was, you know, for a long time, the scale was still in our house for a long time until finally, I don't know, even a few years ago, I think I wrote about it on my blog, but I finally just got rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow. I said, I don't need this even in the house anymore. I think it's because I saw my kids get on it once or twice. And I was like, they don't even see mom and dad get on it. But I don't even want to have them exposed.
Don't go there with them. Yeah, exactly. Don't give them the idea that weighing is something that you should do.
Right.
And I don't think weighing is something that we should do. I don't think we need to know our weight to the pound.
Or the tenth.
The tenth of a pound. Yeah, that's great. I also got rid of my scale pretty early on. Actually, even before, almost immediately when I decided I'm not going to diet anymore, I thought, well, one of the things that I do is weigh almost twice a day and let that number determine how my day is going to go.
Right.
So I knew right away I had to get rid of that scale. And the problem is you still get weighed in life. You go to the doctor. So I went to the doctor recently. Now, one thing I found out you can do is go to the doctor and say you're not going to be weighed. Now, I kind of know generally how much I weigh, but not to the pound. But I have an idea. You know how well your clothes fit.
Yeah.
What I was the last time I went. And my doctor said to me, oh, what's your weight? We didn't get a weight for you. Why don't you get on the scale? I said, you know, not today. I'm not really feeling it. I usually let them weigh me once a year just so I have an idea.
Yeah.
But I kind of had to explain to her, listen, like sometimes I get on the scale and because the association that I used to have with it about how that measured my dieting progress, that will trigger disordered eating for at least a couple of days for me sometimes.
Absolutely. And I think that's an experience that I hear a lot with people is that medical visit, being weighed, having that conversation with their doctor, health or nurse practitioner, whoever it is, can lead to a lot of disordered eating habits and a lot of triggers just in that moment.
Yeah. And I think that it's like a Pavlovian response. It's sort of like, and maybe I need exposure therapy at this point. Maybe I need to get on the scale every day and be like, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't see it as a necessary part. You know, I feel like my eating is pretty competent now, or I'm pretty competent at eating. So I just, you know, and when I did get on the scale last year, I went, oh, my weight didn't change. That's pretty cool. But I wasn't up for it right at that very moment.
Right.
And, you know, it's good to know that we have control over that and we can say no.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going for surgery, you should probably get weighed so they can dose the
probably important
anesthesia. Right? But other than that, I don't really see if you're not really sick, you know. As a dietitian, I look at weight at people in the hospital to make sure they're not losing a ton of weight because that usually means they're pretty sick.
Right.
Other than that, if you're pretty healthy, I don't think you need to be weighed all the time.
Yeah.
And I think the damage it causes is not worth the benefit.
Right. So for you, what was an important thing for you to help develop more body positivity after years of weighing yourself and struggling with body image and dieting and things like that?
The thing that I had to do was first, because I went around because I felt that I should not be fat, neither should anybody else. And I'm not proud to say it, but I think a lot of us who are dieters think that way, that you kind of develop an aversion to fatness. And I realized that I really needed to change how I saw that. And so I started looking on the internet. I don't know how I stumbled on a few fat fashion blogs. And it was really a revelation to see fat women, and not just like curvy, like plus size models, but like fat women with bellies and butts, you know, and not in the hourglass proportion that you usually see that is acceptable for the plus size woman. To see these women kind of saying like, screw you world, I'm going to wear nice clothes anyway. And really that was my exposure therapy, is just exposing myself to fat bodies in a positive light. And, you know, them standing there in these great clothes and saying, I'm going to be photographed in every angle possible, and I'm going to wear things that aren't flattering, quote unquote flattering. And that was the greatest thing for me to see. It's like having a role model in a way. So I realized, well, if they don't care, maybe I can just not care. Now, it was a lot longer for me. Like, I could see their bodies as beautiful or acceptable or whatever you want to say, but I could see those bodies as okay right away, almost. But for myself, that took a lot longer to be able to then look in the mirror and say, oh, this is okay.
So which fashion blogs do you like?
I started out with one called Curvy Canadian. And she actually has a store in the neighborhood I used to live in Toronto. So I want to go back there and visit her store.
Yeah.
Gabby Fresh is another one. Gabby Gregg is, and she's like really popular now. She's launched swimsuit lines that have sold out. Who else? Garner Style. I think her name's Chastity Garner. I really like that one. There's a lot of them. I just recently went through, I got a new computer last night, and I bookmarked all my fashion blogs. Okay. And I was like, this is so fun. I'm going to start looking at these again. And I just think that these women look great. And fashion is about just fashion. It's about the clothes that you put on your body. You right. don't have to be a certain size to wear clothing.
Yeah.
We all need to wear it. So there are these bodies that are this size. And so those were extremely helpful. And I started to buy actually clothes that I would never have bought. My mom used to say, don't wear anything tied in the middle or cinched in the middle, because with our bodies, we look like potato sacks tied in the middle with a string. My great grandmother used to say that, which is the weirdest thing, because I love potatoes. And if they were tied in the middle of the string, I would not love the potatoes less,
yeah.
you know, the sack of potatoes. But I started to get stuff like that, that was like, I'm going to break all these fashion rules.
Yeah.
And see what I actually like to wear and see my body as sort of neutral. And it's, again, it's work. It is a lot of work to do that, because I think it's one thing to see another person's body and go, you're okay. But it was hard to see my own body, which was also kind of rapidly changing, going from a smaller size to a larger size. It's like, oh, this is new. Okay. But it's weird, because I had been this size in my teen years.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have all this body hatred.
Yeah.
So I hadn't learned that yet completely. And I still liked clothes, and I didn't feel this bad about myself. I knew maybe I had the wrong body. That's what I thought, somehow I had the wrong body, but I didn't. It wasn't to the hatred didn't ramp up until I actually lost weight and started dieting. And,
yeah.
you know, so that was the big part that I had to do around body positivity and liking myself and being like, okay, I'm just going to let my body determine how much I'm going to eat. If this is me gaining weight on relatively moderate amounts of food, then this is what my body needs to be, and kind of an acceptance for myself.
Yeah. And I think the thing that was helpful for me is doing a lot of like reorganizing of my social media feeds. On some level, and really changing what I was surrounded with on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
and really almost seeking out body positive articles to read. Now, most of them are from the female perspective, but mm-hmm. but there's a lot that I can take from them and use, and I think that has really helped me, is like knowing that there are other people out there that are promoting a message that is, to me, more inclusive than exclusive, and making sure that I get that message on a really regular basis. And I think that has really been quite helpful in knowing that, you know, oh, I see this, you know, it's more prevalent to me, even though it might not be around the world, it's more prevalent in my world. And that helps me feel more positive about myself. And so taking some of those things each day to help me feel that way is really helpful.
And then do you find doing that, it also helps with your eating, being more in tune with your body, or?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think that, to be honest, I think that I did enough work on that where like that is pretty stable, right? I would say the body positive part for me came much later, right? The comfort with food was there, right? And I devoted a lot of effort to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the body part came after, like I realized, oh, I think I need to work on this body part.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think that's been like the newer sort of revelation, you know, within the past, you know, few years, that's really taken hold and more realized that's where some work needs to be done.
That's great, because it's almost the opposite order to which it happened for me, which just goes to show that intuitive eating is so flexible that you can just start wherever you are.
Yeah.
And just decide what part do you need help with the most, and just start there. and figure it out as you go along. It's not, again, a diet is, if you compare it to a diet is rigid. You know,
right.
You have to do, I went to Weight Watchers for years. There's a plan. You do the steps, you know. You start with counting your calories. Then maybe you work in exercise. Then you never do body positive work, really,
right.
Ever. But that I recall, anyway. But it is flexible. And I think that anybody can start wherever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the thing I would add to that, too, is that wherever you start with it, right, is just sort of saying, this is the most important thing right now. This is what I really need to put my effort towards, and knowing that, you know, there are these different parts that will come into play, but also understanding, no, this is my need right now. This is what I really need to focus on. And that's okay. Like you said, it's flexible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're not going to be able to do that part, especially if you're working with a dietitian, I know you're probably like, hey, if you're not ready to work on that, let's go to try something else. You know, you're not forcing the issue. And that, I think, is why intuitive eating is so, sort of comforting in the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the stumbling blocks I've had has been figuring out when I'm full and what fullness feels like for me. And I decided last year to sort of really work on it a bit more,
mm-hmm.
and decide, do I want to be full or do I want to be just not hungry? And I read this great description in Fiona Willer's book about intuitive eating, and it's for professionals, but saying that it's not really fullness. You're kind of aiming for no longer hungry. And I had never really made that distinction before, uh-huh. between, oh, fullness is a little bit different. The absence of hunger is maybe where I want to be. And that you have to determine what is comfortable for you.
Yeah.
There are times when I just am fine with being no longer hungry. There are other times when I kind of want to have a little bit more fullness going on. Not uncomfortable fullness, but like, oh, okay, yeah, that was good. It just depends on the kind of meal I'm eating. Is it a celebratory meal? Is it just, you know, am I at work? What's going on? You know, so I think there's a lot of flexibility with that, too. You determine your level of fullness. And that's where we make sure that it doesn't become rigid, like a diet. Intuitive eating is not, they're not rules. You can determine on a day-by-day basis how full you want to be, how hungry you want to be before you get to a meal. That's the other thing I had to learn, is how hungry do I want to be? I don't want to be so hungry. I found there's a point I get hungry that I actually get nauseated. I don't ever want to get to that point.
You know, it's so interesting you mentioned that too, because, you know, I used to overeat a lot.
Mm.
I mean, that was just sort of the default, you know, and to leave a meal feeling so uncomfortable. And it rarely happens anymore. And when it does, it's like, oh my goodness, I remember how horrible this feels.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful that it only happens, you know, once or twice a year instead of like every day.
Thanksgiving full.
Right. I mean, it's just, it's so nice when it, honestly, I'm like thankful when it happens on some level, because I'm thankful that it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah, I totally have that same gratitude, too, because before I started dieting, I was a real overeater. And then when I started dieting, I didn't overeat except for when I was binging. You know, I could manage to get through the week and not eat very much. But if a special meal came up, oh, boy, I was going to walk out of that full and uncomfortable. And that happened more often. That happened more often when I was dieting than it ever does now, because I realized I hate that full feeling, that really over full feeling.
Yeah.
And now I can stop, because I know either this is going to be leftovers for me, or if I don't want to take it home, I'm not treating myself as the garbage can and cleaning my plate.
Right.
So it's that sense of gratitude, like, oh, I'm so happy I don't have to be that full ever again if I don't want to be. So, and then determining the level of hunger was another challenge for me, because I was just used to ignoring my hunger all morning. Especially the morning would be the worst, because I would have sort of this sad breakfast. It wasn't sad. Actually, it was good breakfast, but it wasn't enough to get me through the whole morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just play this game of like, well, can I go a bit longer? Okay, can I have something that has no calories in it now? You know, and I realized snacks are great, but they aren't a trick. They're just to sort of plug in when you're not ready for a full meal.
Right.
So figuring that out was really difficult for me. Like, how hungry do I want to get? How long should I go? What do I do in between when I'm not ready to eat? But, I need something. So that was also a big challenge for me is learning that snacks are not to be things that you're just trying to have air food. Right. Like a bag. I would eat a bag of low-fat popcorn, which is not actually that. A whole bag of that is not really that great unless you're starving. So now I can actually have a snack of like a little bit of cheese and crackers or something like that. And it's like, oh, there, hunger gone until lunch. Great.
Right.
So learning the hunger thing was pretty difficult too. But I feel like this year I'm kind of no problems anymore. I'm so relaxed around food now. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
I really lost the interest in food that I had.
Well, so. And again, it's that freeing part, right? Just know that I don't need to be so hyper-focused, so obsessed. So my life, I will free up other parts of my life if I'm willing to sort of let this piece just go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been great to learn to do other things and have other... At first, I had all this time. I'm like, well, what am I going to do now with all this time? Oh, I can learn other things and read other things and...
Start a podcast.
Start a blog, which are about food, sort of. But, you know, I'm not obsessed about food 24 hours a day now. I can actually sit and read a book.
Yeah.
You know, I learned to crochet badly. You can learn to do other things badly when you have all this great time on your hands that you're not thinking about food.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Cool. Anything else you want to sort of add for today's topic?
Intuitive eating is totally cool.
Rocks.
You should do it.
You should totally do it.
I think we're talking about this too because we're in the middle of diet season.
Right.
And I think people think, well, if I'm not going to diet and try to lose weight, what else is there? Because I do want to eat healthier. So I think that there's intuitive eating, and that once you get into intuitive eating, you can really start to focus on the nutrition, which is what I do now. So now I focus a bit more on what is it that I need to be healthy?
Yeah.
And that still is heavily focused on how foods make me feel.
Right.
But like I need vegetables every day to kind of feel good. Maybe it's a psychological component of eating, but I still need them, you know, and I feel good and I enjoy them. So I don't eat food I don't like, but there are a lot of vegetables that I do like. And so after you kind of get down to, you've learned to listen to those internal signals, you can then start to really work on the nutrition component.
Right.
But I feel like that comes long after.
You're right. And I think that this is, you know, the best time of year to be talking about all this stuff, because someone might be listening right now and saying, I don't know, I'm going to give this diet one more shot. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's great. We want you to do that. We want to do what you think is best for you. But know that this is here for you when you're ready.
Yeah. And this can also help you get your best body of 2016.
This is going to help you get your best mind, body, soul for 2016.
And the rest of your life.
Right.
It's not just for 2016.
So take that, Oprah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we'll be back again soon for another episode of Dietitians Unplugged.
Okay, thanks for listening.
All right, thanks, everyone.